Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Well, I am delighted and privileged to have the Irish composer John Kinsella back on Church and Culture. It's been a while. We did a number of shows with John about his music, his 11 symphonies, his concerti, violin concertos, cello concertos, string quartets, and other various works. And they're all wonderful. I look forward to the day when the complete symphonies of John Kinsella are available. John, welcome back to Church and Culture.
Thank you very much, Steve.
And I know that our listeners remember you, so we won't do any more damage to your bio than I've already done. You know, I asked you to come and talk about your early experiences of music that that first made a deep impression on you. Now, we're starting with the Beethoven Third Piano Concerto, but is that where you started? Where did you? Where was the first piece of music you remember hearing that touched you?
It was definitely one of the first that made a huge impression on me. And there's a magazine issued by the BBC. We used to get the BBC quite clearly years ago on radio. And I'd page through it each week to see, was the Beethoven Third Piano Concerto going to be played during that week? And if it was, well, then that would turn out to be the high point of my week. And what I particularly like about this piece is, perversely, if you like, if I could pick a sort of favorite passage, is the actual opening played by the orchestra, which serves the purpose of setting up a dramatic entrance by the piano. It's the sheer skill and clarity of everything Beethoven does to set up that particular tense moment, or moment of relief, if you like, that impressed me so much. So I just think it's a perfect piece of music, and if I'm ever going to a desert island, this would certainly be with me.
Okay, a desert island, and a disc for John Kinsella. And we're going to play it now, featuring Claudio Botto as conductor, his Lucerne Festival Orchestra. And if the piano got to come in, which it is not, that'd be Alfred Brendel. Let's listen. Was Mozart's very famous serenade, Eine kleine Nachtmusik, played on original instruments, conducted by Nicholas Hahnenkor. And John, you know, this was the one piece that kind of surprised me that you would tell me to that was inspiring to you, because it's become so familiar.
Yes, well, I think I came to know this piece while my age was in single figures, you know, from listening to radio and that. And it was the sheer perfection of the whole thing, and the energy and the clarity and the sort of inspiration that the music sort of throws out. I found it extremely exciting. And it stayed with me for a very long time as a very favorite piece. It still is. But like a lot of people now, one doesn't really have to play the record. You can sing it in your head, you know?
Well, you know, John, it's interesting that as I looked around for what performance I wanted to play with you on this show, I found myself greatly enjoying listening to five or six versions of that opening movement of that serenade, and I hope you were happy with the one I chose.
Oh, yes, Nicholas Harnoncourt and the period instruments, yes, absolutely perfect. He definitely was one of my favorite conductors.
So we are going back now to the Beethoven Third Piano Concerto that John Kinsella talked about at the beginning of the program. And as you say, we're only going to listen to the orchestral music that takes us up to the entry of the piano. And I want to tell our listeners that there was some misunderstanding between me and John on this. I read his email saying that he wanted me to start where the piano starts, which seemed utterly reasonable to me. But as it turned out, I got it wrong. We're going to listen to the opening orchestral introduction, as he says, so beautifully leads up to the entry of the piano. Let's listen now. That is so exuberant. That's the Beethoven Third Piano Concerto, the introduction, the orchestral introduction conducted by Claudio Bado and the Vienna Philharmonic. John, were you sitting in your Dublin living room listening to the radio when you heard this?
Yes, indeed. All my early experiences were radio listening. And we're talking of going back into the early 40s, you know, the beginning of World War II. So the radio was the access in 78 records, that sort of thing. But I think that, you know, the skill of Beethoven in setting up the, if you like, teeing up the soloist to take off is absolutely incredible. And then he pulls a fast one with his fourth concerto where the piano starts before you hear the orchestra. And then in number five, he starts the two together. So he's always pulling tricks.
Now, was your father in World War II?
No. Being in Ireland, we weren't directly involved. But a very good friend of mine who's still alive actually fought in the RAF in the in Africa, Alamein, along there, Italy, 1944. And he's 97 this year now, coming up shortly.
Wow. Yeah, like my mother, she's still with us at 95, and my father flew over Eastern Europe in B-24s. But, you know, I have this image of you as a young boy in your shorts, sitting on the floor. It's a wireless radio, correct?
That's right. That's where we used to get the battery filled up when it died out. Take it down to the shop and have them charge it up again.
And you got pretty good sound out of there. You got pretty good sound out of there, didn't you?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it was terrific. I thought I was in heaven, you know, listening to this stuff. And the old piano, the old gramophone, the wind-up gramophone, with the, you know, the HMV with the horn on it, his master's voice with the dog.
Right.
One like that.
And you played your 78s on it.
78s, yes. And a friend of mine had an even older one. His father had it. And, you know, the little metal needles that you replaced mm-hmm. every so often? This one used, like, little wooden needles that you, every so often, you pared them down again to get a sharper point on it.
Wow. Wow.
Talk about prehistory.
How long we've come. So we are now going to move from Beethoven to Brahms. Now, this clarinet quintet, was this something you heard about the same time you heard the Beethoven and the Mozart?
This would have come a little bit later. The obsession with Brahms, which I shared with him. I played a lot of chamber music then later on in my later teens and that and so on. And this chap was a violinist, and we had this mutual fascination for Brahms that we shared for a few years. I think a lot of people go through that, and we just couldn't listen to anything else but Brahms for a period. And this slow movement of the quintet, it's sort of like gypsy music, and it's so wistful and exploratory and, you know, it's a wonderful piece. I used to just get totally lost with this, listening to it.
Well, let's get lost with it. This recording is from a Deutsche Grammophon, a record, Gervaise de Payer, the clarinetist, Amadeus Quartet, and we want to listen now to the second movement of Brahms' Clarinet Quintet. Wow, John, I am so glad you made me pay attention to this. I haven't heard it in such a long time. Brahms was a great melodist. I think that's something that people perhaps forget.
Oh, yes, one of the finest ever. I saw a quote from Brahms recently when he was writing his second symphony during summertime in Austria somewhere, I think it was. And he said, there are so melodies around here that I have difficulty not to be stepping on them. I thought it was a lovely quote. That particular work is just full of melody from beginning to end.
Now, if a listener particularly liked this piece, you know, the great drawn-out melody, you know, the luxuriance of it, what other Brahms would you recommend be listened to?
Well, in chamber music, the three-string quartets are absolutely top-notch. And, of course, they're lovely quintets, piano quintet, double viola quintets. And, of course, the four symphonies are, when they're properly played, they're absolutely overwhelming. There seems to be a tendency to play Brahms, just downplay him a bit, but if you give him the full energy, the whole thing works like magic.
I love the first piano trio. I think it's in C major.
Yes.
In fact, that was the piece that converted me to Brahms, speaking of
really?
Being converted.
Yeah. Did you go through a Brahms phase, do you?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
I think most people do at some stage.
And I've been coming around, I've been re-listening to all the Brahms symphonies in different versions.
Yes.
And, boy, the versions of Brahms symphonies can really, really differ.
It's an industry in itself, yes.
And the... but it, a lot of the... I think a lot of the chamber and piano music gets... say, not overlooked, at least doesn't get the attention that his big symphonic work has.
Yes, yes, yes. It's wonderful stuff. And, of course, the two piano concertos and the violin concerto as well are really at the top of the repertoire still, you know.
So by what age were you fully, as it were, converted to classical music?
Well, it's very, very difficult to think back, but I was still in single figures, definitely. And I have this memory, I'm not quite sure if it's totally correct, but the family took a trip over to the Isle of Man. You used to be able to take holiday trips over to the Isle of Man by boat from Dublin. And I remember hearing on the tannoy, you know, walking on deck, just this terrific music. And I asked my dad what it was, and he was able to identify it as the Emperor Waltz of Strauss. And that's my very earliest memory of being sort of really, you know, taken aback by something and saying, gosh, what's that?
Sort of, yeah. And were you taking any instruments at this point? Were you learning any piano or anything?
I was in my early... Well, I did take piano lessons up to a point. When I was in sort of mid-teens, I was a late starter at a lot of things. I didn't continue with that. I played a bit just for composition, and that's about it. But then I took up violin and then moved on to viola. And all my life I've been playing chamber music with friends and got to know the whole repertoire.
What a blessing. Now, did you pick up
wonderful.
Instruments pretty easily?
Yes. We had a wonderful German violin maker in the center of Dublin, Mr. Hoffman. And I remember my mother bringing me down to buy a violin there, and the smell of the rosin and the wood and the leather and everything, you know, was absolute magic. The reason she bought the violin was that she liked Little Serenade by Dvorak, and she was hoping I'd be able to play it for her someday.
Ha.
I eventually did.
And you, so your violin and viola experience, were those the instruments you were most comfortable with when you began composing?
Yes. Yeah, if you look around, it's very strange, and there's nothing premeditated about it, but if you look at a lot of composers play the viola, you know, they tend to lurk in the middle of the orchestra, not being too prominent, and they kind of listen to what everybody else is doing.
Did you ever hear Lionel Tertis play?
Oh, gosh, yeah. He used to make his own violas, I believe.
Yes, well, he was very fond of playing Delius, one of my favorite composers.
Yes, yes, there was a great vogue in Delius, yes, I remember that.
Do you remember Sir Thomas Beecham coming over the BBC
yes.
talking about Delius?
Yes, yes. I actually remember him playing Delius at Brig Fair
yes.
in Dublin. Yeah.
Wow.
I have memories of seeing Sir Thomas. He was a great Delius fan, yes.
I've told you I have a huge crush on Delius, haven't I?
You have. You mentioned it.
Okay, all right. So I am talking with a familiar voice on Church and Culture, John Kinsella from Dublin. Been composing music, since I guess the 1950s, if I'm not incorrect, and worked at Irish Radio RTE from 1968 to 1983.
Right.
No, 1988, when you stepped down to devote yourself to composition. We're going to be talking more to John and playing a Christmas piece after this message.
Today's programming on 990 WDEO is brought to you in part by a gift made from our day sponsor, Francine Sanic. To thank Father Jack Child, Father James Maloney, and Father Joe Miller for all their many years in the priesthood and continuing to do God's work into their 80s, as well as helping her grow in her faith. You can be a day sponsor too. Call toll free 1-877-288-1077 and say, "I want to be a day sponsor."
What are the doctrines Catholics believe, and why do we believe them? Hi, this is Peggy Stanton. Join me on Power from the Pews for more than a minute with the Catechism as I quiz the experts, top theologians, philosophers, and catechists to share the truths about our Catholic faith. That's this Saturday at 11 a.m. and Sunday at 9:30 a.m. on Ave Maria Radio and AveMariaRadio.net.
For several days, my daughter complained about a particular girl who constantly bragged about how rich her family is. "I'm so sick of it, Mom. I want her to stop." It was a teachable moment about what it means to be humble. It is to speak in a way that we glorify God and not ourselves. In the book of James, we're told, "Humble yourself before the Lord, and he will lift you up in honor." Let others speak of your successes, good nature, and family attributes. We're not here to appease the world. The author C.S. Lewis once said, "True humility is not thinking less of yourself, it is thinking of yourself less." So let's focus on God so we can brag about Him to our friends and family. Scripture says that if we truly love God, then we will submit to His truth and will for our lives, not our own truth. Being humble is about giving the glory to Him and not ourselves. This has been a Christ-centered communication message. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo, a communications evangelist.
I am back with Irish composer John Kinsella, and I've asked him to reminisce a bit about the music that first made a strong impression on him and led him into a lifetime of composing and being involved in the world of great music. And John, I'm glad you gave us what I guess could be called a Christmas piece. Could you tell our listeners about this?
Yeah, there was a time during my early listening again, you know, that it appeared regularly every Christmas. You couldn't escape from the Carol Symphony. And it just colored all my Christmas memories for many years. And I just got to love the piece. And if I didn't hear it over Christmas, I'd feel something was missing. But it's disappeared from the repertoire now in recent years, which is a great, great pity. And
It's a piece that I've known for a long time, and I guess what was one of the first recordings, Barry Rose and the Pro Arte Orchestra.
Oh, gosh, yes.
And you remember hearing this again on your wireless?
Oh, yes, the BBC orchestras used to play it quite a lot. The BBC Concert Orchestra, they gave many concerts during lunchtime when I was having a break at school. I live quite near school. I'd just run home and listen to a concert and go back. And Evie Hutchinson was quite a regular Christmas visitor to that scene.
Well, let's listen to Victor Haley Hutchinson and the opening of his Carol Symphony.
Thank you.
was marvelous. From 1927, Victor Haley Hutchinson, A Carol Symphony. John, is that a performance that you think does justice to the music?
Oh, I think so, yeah. Plenty of energy. Festival sounds. Christmas is coming. Great stuff.
I mean, I love those big old basses when they start playing the carol tune. And it really does kind of pick you up, and I can see how that could become part of somebody's Christmas memory, your Christmas
memory. Oh, very much so, yeah, very much so. It's kind of miss it now, you know. As I say, it seems to have fallen out of the repertoire, but maybe it hasn't.
Well, the more people, and I want to tell our listeners that this is available, several recordings now. There's a new one on Naxos, conducted by Gavin Sutherland. You can get that classic, Barry Rose, is still available. But that's something that our listeners might want to add to their Christmas tree this year. Now, John, I know that Sibelius has played a very big role in your musical education, formation, life. Was the Karelia Symphony, or Suite, I should say, one of the first pieces you heard by him?
Yes, it was. Again, I got to know Sibelius quite early on. And in fact, we had the conductor back in the late 40s, early 50s, Michael Bowles. And he was a great Sibelius fan. And I remember being at some concerts, Sunday afternoon concerts, and heard quite a lot of Sibelius in his programs. So he was way ahead of his time, because I think it took a long time for Sibelius to make his mark. He certainly made his mark early on in the States and in England and in Ireland too, judging by reactions I get from people. But I think on the continent he found it difficult to make a mark. But it's wonderful music. It's so healthy and refreshing. It's good for the soul, I think, Sibelius.
Yeah, I agree. Why though the Karelia? Is it just something, the first piece that that connected with you?
Yes, I picked it up on an LP, I think, early on. I'm not sure if it was on the same LP as the violin concerto with Isaac Stern. I used to listen to that quite a lot. But around that period, I picked up an LP of it, and with some friends we used to listen to it all the time. And I remember the first time I heard the First Symphony, I just couldn't make out what was happening to me. I was so excited by the whole thing.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, the Karelia refers to a region, kind of a snowy region, north of Finland,
right.
Russian border. Let's listen the conductor Oku Kamu and the Helsinki Symphony Orchestra play the opening of the Karelia Suite by Jan Sibelius.
Thank you.
We've been listening to the opening of the Corellia Suite by Jan Sibelius, a composer who had a huge impact on the life of this man we're talking to, John Kinsella, Irish composer living in Dublin. And that is such a wistful and, I would say, nature-related piece. I think it had natural attraction to any young people.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's I find it totally irresistible. And you put your finger on it, I think, from my point of view, the feeling of nature. You know, you can almost smell it, you know, the dampness of the ground and leaves and trees and things like that. It's wonderful. Amazing.
Yeah, it just draws you in, and it makes you want to hear the rest of it. Now, the piece you've chosen next, I want to tell you, I was so thrilled, because this is a piece of music I have particular affection for, but yet I find my affection is not shared by very many people. We're talking about the second piano concerto of the Russian composer Dmitri Shostakovich in the slow movement. And I'll tell you, John, when I've mentioned to this my regard for this to professional musicians, I kind of get a nose in the air.
Oh, yes.
Why is that?
Amazing. I do not know. I think it's all this kind of weird political correctness that crept into music in the post-Schoenberg years. And I think... Well, he did write it for his son, you know, so I suppose he was interacting with this young son pianist of his on a certain level. But for a great composer like Shostakovich, who's undoubtedly one of the greatest ever, to have the sort of wonderful humanity to be able to write a piece like this, in the face and the teeth of all the criticism, and that he just doesn't bother. It's just wonderful music. You know, what's the problem?
Yeah, what John and I are alluding to is the fact that what you're about to hear is about as beautiful, I mean, directly, immediately beautiful piece of music that you'll ever hear. You'll even maybe for a moment think it was written by Chopin. It has that kind of...
Yes,
doesn't it?
Yes, indeed.
And it was written in 1947 for his son, Maxime, who I met once.
That's right.
19th birthday. Maxime has recorded it himself, but I prefer the recording we're about to hear. This is Dmitri Alexeyev, a Russian pianist. And he's playing with the English Chamber Orchestra. Hold on to your seats, folks. If you haven't heard this, it's very special. The second movement of Shostakovich's Second Piano Concerto. beautiful. John Kinsella, do you remember when you first heard this Shostakovich second piano concerto?
Not exactly my first, but I did get to know it as it was written. And it was a revelation, you know, that somebody of his stature would, in the teeth of all the musical...
modernism.
Criticism, you know, modernist stuff, doesn't, and he just comes out with this. And he did the same with his cello concerto. He produced this wonderful, endless melodies.
Baudelaire had a phrase, "My heart laid bare," and that's what I hear in this piano concerto.
Yeah, wonderful stuff.
It was an amazing act of bravery, one of many for that composer. And
yes.
It's kind of brave for you to come on and share these early experiences in music. I really appreciate your doing that, John.
It's been a great pleasure to you, as ever.
And I want to tell our listeners that during the break, John told me he was ready to dive into his 12th symphony. And for that, we are all grateful as well. John, I want you and your family to have a Merry, Merry Christmas, and we will talk to you in 2019.
Thank you very much, Stephen, and a happy and holy Christmas to you as well.
Thank you, and to you listening, I'll be back this time next week.
If you have any comments or questions about church and culture, you can contact Deal Hudson at dhudson@avemariaradio.net.